What did I do? We're back.
And whoops.
We're back twice? Two screw-ups up with the iTunes. That's fantastic. Beth, yep, you're listening to Davin's Den. Number to call in, 845-986-8804, 845-986-8804. Of course, you could hang out in the Den Pen, the chat room. We're having fun in the chat room tonight, Pip?
Yeah, we are.
Awesome. Joe caught us up. I told everybody about my little working thing, and then Pip repulsed us.
Business as usual.
Okay, cat butter. All right, that was good, I guess.
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't.
Sounds terrible. You know, I guess we haven't done this in a while. Let's do a little, should we do a little comics in the news?
Mm.
Yeah.
All right, do a little comics in the news. Here it is. Joe put on his headphones now.
And now it's time for Comics in the News.
There it was. All right. I didn't have this on the thing, but I guess we should talk about it. It happened while we were away on break. Robin Williams passed away.
It's shocking.
It was kind of shocking. Didn't expect that.
Yeah.
You know, Rob, there was such an outpouring of love.
Yeah.
Towards Robin Williams, and you think about it. I mean, he did bring a lot of joy to people and everything.
Yeah, but it didn't shock me as much as I thought it would shock me, because basically, when you're that brilliant,
yeah.
He had a dark side, and when you're that brilliant, there's a very slim margin.
Yeah, but nobody knew about his dark side.
I mean, there were stories.
There were stories that he had a coke problem, but he seemed to have gotten that under control in the 80s. You know, there's stories that he stole material from comics.
Oh, really? I didn't hear about that.
Which I kind of found funny, in the fact that nobody brought that up. When they, like no comics brought that up and everything. It was just like all these, bouquets of flowers and everything.
Well, you don't want to damn the guy at a time of his death.
No, I understand that, but, you know, it's part of the picture.
Right,
You know, I mean, he did a lot of great work for the homeless in America and everything. Him, Billy Crystal, and Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah.
And, can't think of the guy's name. Bob Zamuda. You know,
I don't even remember who that is.
That is Andy Kaufman's buddy. He used to
play. Oh, okay.
They did a lot of work with it. You know, they did the comic relief.
Comic relief, yeah.
They did a lot. I mean, listen, Robin Williams brought a lot of joy.
He was a very giving individual, from what I understand. But like I said, there are, you know, a lot of comics, we have a deep dark side, and sometimes that deep dark side can sneak up.
Yeah.
And if it gets you in a vulnerable spot, a lot of bad can happen.
But they're saying, now here's the interesting thing, is like a lot of people are like, wow, how could he be so depressed? He has it all and everything. But they're saying part of that might have been the fact that he'd just been diagnosed with Parkinson's.
You know,
Parkinson's leads to depression.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, because whenever you have some kind of, you know, debilitating disease that is progressive like that, you know, as those, you know, signs start happening, people, you know, start to realize, you know, I can't stop this, and my life is going to change, and I'm sure that does, play into your frame of mind.
That can be managed to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ALS, there's no treatment, there's no cure. You know, you get it, it gets worse.
Right.
But this, it changes, I guess, the composition of the chemistry in the brain.
Yes.
Parkinson's, which led to the depression and everything.
If you get in this spot, everybody's seen the blog I wrote. If you get into a spot where you are in a mood where this is the only way out, you try to work your way out of it. It's going, there's an option, and if you can't, and you firmly decide that this is the only option, you get into a mindset that anything around you doesn't matter, this is the route you're going to take, and you just get into a mindset. You know, that was the mindset my father was in, you know, and you, this is what you're going to do, and this is...
But nobody suspected this about him. Like, his closest friends didn't even know.
No, it didn't seem like people really saw it coming.
I was surprised by it.
I was surprised at the timing, because, of course, I don't know him personally, or I didn't, and didn't spend any time with him. But it's also, my brother was like, oh, well, the answer is he was diagnosed with Parkinson's. That's the answer. It's like, no, he didn't even need to be diagnosed with Parkinson's to be in danger of committing suicide. That he had, he was not diagnosed manic depressive. Some people, or bipolar, some people thought that was perhaps, part of his makeup. But, I mean,
diagnosed as manic?
No, I don't know that he was.
Nobody's ever said that. I mean, he certainly, his interviews were manic.
People suspected that he might be. That might be just part of his comedy.
But nobody ever spoke of him being depressed, though.
Well, it could have gone in hand in hand with the. He went into rehab. He was in rehab at the beginning of the year. Was am I correct?
No, he was getting ready to go. I think he was getting ready to go back just to manage.
So you that's got what you I know. Thought. So maybe if he went into rehab, there might have been issues why he fell off the wagon.
Well, mm-hmm. I mean, alcohol is a depressant,
right? So maybe those reasons he did probably get off the wagon, but maybe those reasons did not go away.
Well, one of the things about going into rehab, I mean, besides managing, a lot of people are drinking and doing drugs because they're self-medicating to make themselves feel better, even though those might not be the medications that are going to help you, but they are self-medicating.
Yeah.
And once that self-medication, quote-unquote, is taken away, and part of rehab is therapy and going into the root of the cause of, you know, why you're depressed or why you are self-medicating. Once those things, those secrets or those feelings are unearthed, it can just be unbelievably earth-shattering and also depressing, you know? There's emotional fallout from that kind of situation. So whatever he was dealing with, it was really heavy load for him. And you know, my blog as well, I certainly have, you know, battled depression, you know, for years. And it's like, when you're in that mindset, when it's really got you, you don't see the forest for the trees. You just don't.
You don't.
Just a note as a performer, it's not a good move if you want to get laughs, if an audience is annoying you, to tell them, you know what, maybe Robin Williams was right.
You know, somebody said that recently on Facebook.
Oh, I did that a couple of times on my show.
No, you didn't.
Of course I did.
Oh, Jesus.
People are on vacation, and I'm going to ruin it.
Oh, my God.
Mission accomplished.
Well, he did. He did.
They groaned. We got over it.
They're up. They're out, you know. They're going, drag your ass in a float, old man.
No, they were being annoying, so I was talking about my demise, not theirs.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
What?
Just get people to laugh.
It should.
Too soon.
Suicide's touchy that way.
Yeah. You think?
I think Robin Williams was a better actor than a comedian. I don't really like his comedy. I mean, I saw his last special from a few years back on HBO, and it just really, I personally didn't enjoy it, but the man was a brilliant actor.
Yes.
He was a brilliant actor because he, you know, in my opinion, he was able to do all these characters and, you know, and create a scene and go off on a tangent. So when you're doing, when you're an actor, you have to get into a character, get into a mood.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very well suited for that. How many Academy Awards did he win? He won an Academy.
I forget
Award.
How many.
One or two.
But
I think he won for, what was it, Good Will Hunting?
Yes.
I think so.
Co-host star?
I think so. Supporting actor.
Supporting actor.
But he went to Juilliard. He was no slouch.
Mm.
You know, Christopher Reeve was his roommate.
Right.
You know, I mean, all these things came out about how he gave them money.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had a tough time after his debilitating accident.
You really pretty much heard from a lot of people that were saying, he was a good dude.
Yeah, really good dude.
It's a shame, you know. It's a shame, but it's that dark side, that monkey on your back, and you try to repress it, you try to get rid of it, you try it through therapy, and sometimes you can, and sometimes you can't. No matter how much fame, recognition, money you have, it's still there. And even if you feel in your own, like people would look at Robin Williams and go, "Oh, you're an Academy Award actor, you're all this," but there may be an agenda where you want to be as a person that even with all of that, you fail.
Well, I mean,
that he failed, you know, but it's meaningless.
It's
nothing.
Interesting. He just had his TV show canceled.
Yes.
But he's got four movies coming out in the next couple of months.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's always working. He just signed on to do Mrs. Doubtfire, too. So I don't, with him, I really don't think it was career with him. I think it was something else. I think it might have been a chemical imbalance in his brain. Because a career, there's so much success in that man's career.
Yeah, so many. Well, you know, every career has ups and downs, but he had so many projects.
He had so many ups.
Yeah, he had so many amazing successes.
You could leave things, you know, as a professional, you try to leave everything you can going on in your life at the door.
Yeah.
And a lot of guys can, you know. A lot of guys could leave things at the door, but sometimes when you don't leave things at the door, when you go home, it's like you start thinking and this, that, and the other thing, you know, like I said, me personally, I've gone through a very big rough patch. Now, when we had the break, that one winter. I mean, I was, I came back.
It's always touch and go when I work at the Atlantis, what state of mind Joe's going to be in when we
get back. That actually crossed my mind, you know, and actually there's been some, you know, a lot of positive stuff going on. So,
it's not me.
No,
you don't bring the rain.
Maybe I do. I can't take that gig anymore. It's going to mess up show.
Yeah.
No, but you know, some positive things, a lot of positive things have happened. So, but that dark place that I feel once he got out of rehab, they might have cured him of being, you know, got him off the booze, mm-hmm. but that dark place is still
there,
lurking around and did not go away.
No, and
that's
now
true. You just don't know.
You don't
and,
know.
And, you know, as Joe said, a lot of funny men, so to speak, they do. The reason they're funny is because there's so much pain.
Yes.
The reason you do, you know, you build up, you have your pain and your sense of humor is your self-defense mechanism.
Your coping mechanism.
Your coping mechanism. Now, once you get that and you're starting to make yourself laugh against the things that pain you, then you start being funny in front of other people.
Yeah.
People start laughing. Now you're getting feedback and the attention maybe that you're craving, and that feeds, you know, makes you feel better.
Positive reinforcement.
Right.
He was never the type of a comic like a Titus was, who would, like, draw from his pain and bring it to his act, though.
Right, no.
He was much more observational.
Oh, right. Yeah.
He wasn't, like, talking about a lot about his personal life and everything.
Right.
But that's very dark and edgy, and that's not the way he went. It seemed to me that Robin Williams, the dark part came out in some of the roles that he played. Like, I don't remember the film, but the guy that developed film, and he became obsessed with this one woman who he'd look at her pictures and broke into her house and stuff. What a creepazoid he played in that.
And it was about Joe?
On a serious note, with in regards to acting, when you're doing acting, with a lot of good acting, and they teach you when you're in acting, take the mood that we want to go with the film and the role. You go to a place. This is where a lot of actors go. Go to the place. And mm-hmm. what they tell you in acting is when you do this role, go to that place and draw from that place and reflect it back on the character. And you mentioned the dark roles, and he's been well in those dark roles,
yes.
in those emotional roles, because he was a Juilliard-trained actor, and I'm assuming, it just seems reasonable, that he went to that place to draw that back into
his
acting.
Here's the problem with anybody that commits suicide. Here's the problem with it. There are people that are left behind, and we've discussed that on this show, that have to deal with that,
mm-hmm.
and will have guilt, no matter even if it's not their fault or not.
Yes.
Will have guilt the rest of their life. It's true, people, it's truly, in a way, it's a very selfish act. Like, I know you're in pain,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, he's got at least a daughter. He might have a couple of kids.
I think he had three children.
All right, he's got
adult children.
Yeah, but unfortunately, if you don't, you know, in, like I said, I was in a very dark place. I realized the effects of it. And that's what mellowed me out. Unfortunately, if you don't know somebody, or fortunately, if you don't know somebody, or you haven't been there, unfortunately or fortunately, you don't know the pain you're going to cause and the scars you're going to leave.
Yeah, but you got to know that. I mean, you got to know. I mean, listen, he was a family guy. He was very private. He was a family guy.
Yeah.
You know, he knew.
No.
I can't excuse
no,
that.
I hate to disagree with you.
No, you don't. You live for it.
Well,
don't you lie to these people.
They know better.
Yeah, but you feel that you were doing a noble cause when you do this because you feel that people's lives might be better. My father killed himself because he thought that my mother would remarry and I'd have another father. Never happened.
Yeah, but why do you have to have you watch and take the dog too? It's a selfish act.
Because you're thinking you're doing a noble act.
How is that noble, that
because
aspect
something
of it?
Snaps inside of you and you're not thinking in a clear space.
It doesn't make sense. I look back at my own moment and it doesn't make sense to me now.
Yeah.
But at the time, it seemed like, well, this is the only thing that I can do.
And it would be the best for everybody.
Yes.
It would be, and it's not being a selfish act. It's an act that you have that you're doing the right thing for everybody involved, not realizing the pain you're going to cause. People feel it's a noble. Some people do it on spite, but some people don't think, well, I'll be better off. The insurance money will hold out. This guy will have a father. You get another dog, blah, blah, blah. And they think it's the better thing to do, and there's no other way else to go. But this, there's no counseling or, you know, there's nobody there to counsel them and bring them back. So if you're in that place, you have it dead set in your mind and you will do it. Like my dad. He patted me on the head, took the dog and went down the road, knowing in his mind that he was doing the right thing,
mm-hmm.
in his mind, because something snapped.
And it doesn't, it you can't rationalize it, and you can't say, what were you thinking? Well, you can't explain that.
Unless you're a real son of a bitch, mm-hmm. unless you're a real son of a bitch, there's somebody in your life when you're at your lowest that you by you being in their life, you make their life better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you got to hold on to.
That's the reality.
Uh-huh. Unless you're like a killer or a rapist or something, and even they have people.
Why are you looking at me?
Well, just because I think of rape and I think things I'd love to do to you.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Of course, if you're agreeing, it's not really right. But that's just technicalities.
Yeah.
But. Is it too dark for this conversation?
No. Yeah, I know. It's like, that's the line.
Really, Joe? We just talked. Oh, God. No, but that's what you got to hold on to. Everybody has their low moments. There's, you know, I talked about it like a month or so ago. I was just like so stressed. Like, fucking drive into the tree. I've had it.
Yep.
But I remember there's a wife and the kid.
Yep.
And that, you know, as worthless as I may feel mm-hmm. at a moment and how I'm not contributing or living up to their expectations, my expectations, whatever it is, there's people that you're, by you being you, whatever you is, you make their life better, especially when you have kids.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you need to hold on to when you're at your lowest point. That's why I say it's selfish. It might hurt to go through life.
Mm-hmm.
It might hurt. And there are highs and there are lows
everything.
But he's got to look at it. He had kids.
Yeah.
Forget about his wife, which was his third wife, I think it was.
Whatever. Oh, so she doesn't count.
No, she does count. She does count. But in this type of case, kids count more.
Yeah, yeah.
Kids count more. They only get one mom and dad.
Right.
As Joe said, you can remarry.
Hey, look, let me tell you something. I never thought, after my father passed, you know, after my father committed suicide, they had me, I was 6 years old. I was in the first grade. And he had me go with a therapist every, and I mentioned this in the blog, I think I mentioned the blog. He had me go with the therapist two times a week and sit and talk. And I go, why is this lady asking me all these questions? You know, I've been just grilled by my mother a zillion times what went on. And I'm like, why is this woman, there's nothing wrong with it. It's fine, you know, and because I figured it didn't really sit in with me.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it took me almost 50 years to find out there was deep scars in there.
Sure.
Right, sure.
After an that affected that. Because mm-hmm. I guess I repressed it so much. But,
you do it to cope, but it's not the healthiest
it
way.
Does, you do more damage doing it to the people around you than you do it to
All
yourself.
All right, let's lighten up the subject a little bit.
Okay.
Let's talk about Cat Williams and guns. So Cat Williams walks into the Comedy Store.
This sounds like a great setup.
Not the cat type of cat that licks butter, although maybe.
No. Cat Williams and some guns go into a Comedy Store.
He walks into a comedy. He's not even performing.
Right.
And some audience members start giving him shit about his height, about his race, this, that, the other thing, whatever the hell it is.
Yeah.
Cat Williams does what nobody's done before and draws a gun on the audience.
Unbelievable.
Well, he's been very unstable as well. Not that he's going to kill himself, but he's been doing a lot of very unstable things. This is just one in, I would say, at least five stories.
Oh, so he's Martin Lewis-ing?
Yeah.
Martin Lewis-ing.
Well, Martin Lewis.
Martin Lawrence.
Yeah. I meant.
Martin Lewis is a guy. Well, Dean, I'm going to pull a gun, Dean. Whoa, why don't you sing a song, Dean? I'll sing a song, Jared.
Oh,
you in blue eyes.
I'm going to cock the gun, Dean. Whoa, matey, duck. Your arm's got to be tired from bailing all that water out of that sink. That was a valiant effort, sir.
Uh-oh. Thank you. I meant Martin Lawrence.
Yes, you did. So, it wasn't even a very good Jerry Lewis, but I knew he was doing all he could to save your ass.
He was trying so hard. What a nice boy.
Look at Joe go.
The job of second Mike.
Yeah. What a pal Joe is being a pip.
That's
right
the
now.
Job of second Mike. Yes. Bailing the third Mike out.
Yeah.
Nobody bailed your ass out with that ketchup joke.
Well, as the first Mike looks on in disgust.
Well, for the record, she looked at it disgusted on your ketchup joke too.
Yeah, look.
You're afraid I did.
I'm not going to the ketchup joke stunk on ice. I understand that.
I'm afraid I did.
Stink
I'm sorry.
Tell you.
Well, listen, he's bailing me out. You're raping me. This has been quite an evening.
Well, he's a nicer person.
Yeah, apparently.
He wasn't bailing you out of the rape, though. He was going to let that happen.
Yeah, I know. Well, I noticed him pick up the camera.
A rape is one thing, but a bad joke cannot stand.
I furled my eyebrow at the rape joke
and
was told to shut up. So no.
By me. No.
It's good to know that if we're ever in a situation I'm going to rape somebody, Joe's defense is he's going to furrow his eyebrow.
Let me go. Oh, get away.
Harumph. Harumph, Davin. Harumph.
You, sir, are a cad.
You are a cad, sir. Harumph. I shall turn myself in another direction while this goes on. Harumph. Good day, sir.
You call yourself a gentleman.
You are no gentleman, sir. And I shall turn away and muffle my ears over the screen.
Do you see my brow, sir? It's furrowed.
It's furrowed.
Rape away if you must.
Good day, sir.
I said good rape. What? Yeah,
but, officer, I furrowed my brow.
I furrowed my brows, sir, and I have no connection to
what this more could I do, for I am only second Mike.
Yes, I'm only second Mike. And decorum does not have me fury infer on what the first Mike is doing, even though it's a total violation of a human being. But that is the rules of Davin's dead. Men have died. Men have died, sir.
Oh, you put it in men have died, let the rape progress.
I'll sit in the corner and knit.
That's
on.
What got you into this rapey mess.
Yes.
Don't need always him. Bringing humor to things.
Always brightens up the suicide talk.
It certainly does. You can't have
enough. The sun is out now in the den.
It's good to be back this year.
Yay!
Yes.
Light talk.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
What? No rape talk at the compound show?
No.
Oh, we're going to need that ice bucket challenge when we're all in hell.
Yes.
I think it's only a matter of time. I can see within the next 2 years where an audience member heckles a comic and a comic shoots him. You're laughing. I'm serious.
No, I've been on stage wishing I had a gun. Don't get me wrong.
Or an audience member shoots a comic.
Yeah.
You know, I somebody's going to lose their cool.
Yeah.
We're such a gun-carrying society. Somebody's going to get hurt.
It's not only that, though. It's that people are not, you know, like civility and decorum are shot. Because
how we just joked about rape.
Yes, exactly. And we are the leaders of this downfall.
Actually, we're not, which is the scary
thing. I know.
I think we're in a society right now with Facebook and Twitter and all that people are just so used to saying things behind the mask of the internet.
Yeah.
Sure. Sometimes they feel now in public they can take on the same attitude, not realizing what the repercussions are.
As a human being you're dealing with. You're right.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, there is that incivility to one another. We also have this thing, you know, we have to be dark and edgy and everybody has to be forthright
about?
And
you
know,
sunshine and lollipops.
Yeah, you know, it's like, you know, what are you talking about? Everybody's in your face. Everybody's a special princess and I can say whatever I want and nobody, you know, they're not going to get in trouble. With behaving like that, being completely oblivious to the needs and, you know, just decency of other human beings. It's out the window.
You also get people that just don't get it. I was working in a show, probably about 3 weeks ago, and an audience member that thought they were friends of the headliner started getting boisterous and ruined the show. The show got stopped for about 10 minutes.
No.
The guys walked. The whole audience turned.
You were telling
this story. Yeah, and the whole, you know, during Florentine show, and the whole audience turned on the heckler.
Yeah.
And they went out, and the guys had no clue that they were acting like assholes.
I'm just trying to help.
You're having fun. You get guys like that. And that happened one time when I was hanging out with Opie and Anthony up in Boston. There were a couple of guys that were just assholes. And I guess one of the handlers took them away and stuff like that. Or told me they got to get out of the green room, whatever the case may be. And Ant looked at me. Anthony looked at me and goes, you know, they just don't get it. They don't comprehend.
Yeah.
But in that person's defense, the Opie and Anthony show encourages that type of terrible behavior.
Yeah, pests.
I mean, you're talking about the guy, Opie and Anthony, the guys who have Shocktober, which is calling somebody else's radio show while they're on the air and turning into shit and goofing on them.
Well,
it's not exactly civility and decorum.
Well, you want to know something? Also, a girl's night out. I've had, when there's a girl's night out, it's just as bad.
Well, yeah. Brought together, there's too much estrogen.
It's just as bad. Or a bachelorette party. It's the same. It's that same mentality. Where where they have no consideration for what's going on. It's pack mentality.
Yes.
They have no consideration for the people around them.
Nope.
You know, so it's...
And their end jokes are fun. And it's like, no, make fun of Kathy now. Whee!
Right. And they're like that the whole night. Yeah. But when you do, then they get offended. The audience is rolling their eyes, you know, and it's just a whole to-do.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like...
amazing, you know.
One joke about Kathy's tits and it's all, and funny games are over. Yeah. She's not into it.
Yeah.
I know. Well, she's got huge ones. You have to talk about them.
I most certainly will.
I like Kathy's tits.
Cat licked them, but whatever. It's not going to stop me.
It doesn't spoil them like butter does.
I feel less safe in comedy clubs than I did 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I do. I just feel like, because first of all, most of the clubs don't police the audience.
No.
Most of the time, it's the comic versus the masses.
Yeah.
It's a very adversarial relationship.
Yes. It seems like that.
Especially with my act.
Well, yeah.
I noticed that my home clubs, they do police it. However, on the road, it's a different story. Because
right.
Sometimes you work for a chain, and what happens is the management of the club isn't there. They have people that do it every week, and they're very indifferent. And sometimes they'd rather have the DJ, and they don't want to police it the way they want to police it. There was when we were working in Michigan, there was a woman that started heckling Davin.
I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, started heckling Davin about 40 in of a 45-50 minute set,
right?
And she was
sure she could take me,
and she was but she was disruptive.
She's sizing you up.
She was disruptive the whole show. So Davin finally at about 40 minutes started to sink his fangs into her.
Yeah,
I don't remember this, yeah. But I'm sure it happened.
Oh yes. Yeah, it sounds completely plausible.
And it was one of those things where the audience had enough of her and stuff like
yeah.
that. The club, the room manager goes, you know, I don't know why he's, you know, laid into it and stuff like that. And I had to bite my tongue.
I got in trouble again.
He got in trouble again.
Yeah.
But it's like, really?
Bangity bang, clangity clang, band!
Same place.
Oh, no!
Play that place yeah. stinks on it. When are we going to be on band? We'll probably go back.
Why? Do you want to go back? I mean, they don't have a Sunday anymore. Who can afford to?
All right, never mind. That place stunk on ice. So,
wow.
But the thing about it is the room manager says, well, I don't know why you heckle. And I'm sitting there biting my tongue. And I'm ready to say, you saw the situation for over an hour.
Yeah.
And you did not even try to, and you're blaming him. How long is he supposed to put up with it? And how long are your patrons supposed to put up with it?
That's the thing that drives me absolutely wild. Because,
you know?
I mean, I don't do stand-up like you guys. I've heard your stories, and I'm often
And you can't
just,
wait to hit the stage for the live roadshow.
Oh, dear God. You people don't bring your tomatoes. Yeah. But I'm, I just am...
Trucker Tom might be hauling them that way.
I know.
Wouldn't that be funny? You see a truck outside with produce on the side? Yeah, baby!
Yeah!
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Give me a punishment song, why don't you?
She's covered in tomato juice.
You're going to be a friggin' salad by the end of the night.
Produce.
I know. But, you know, I hear these things that happen and how they're so lax at the places. I can't believe
like I said,
they leave. It's like the Wild West.
It's like it's the road when you're doing a Wednesday or a Thursday or a Sunday as a tag gig where they have the guy that's just the room manager and he doesn't know about how to run a show or blah, blah, blah. And you go up there and it's disruptive.
Yeah, but Joe, I mean, listen, this just happened even with this gig I was just doing. I mean, this club's been established for years that I was doing. They weren't controlling that Latina woman.
Yeah.
You know, I was on my own having to deal with it, and this was going on. It happened to the other guy after me, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody's controlling. Nobody's doing
well,
that.
The bottom line is their rationale. They're like, well, we don't want to upset the patron. But what you don't understand is the other patrons are getting upset. So
yeah.
you're worried about shushing one patron, but the other 100...
Yeah.
300 people, they don't count?
They're
they have
totally
to focus
annoyed.
On the masses and not just the one table. You can't just focus on the one table that's being a problem. You
right.
have to focus on all the people that are trying to watch the show.
Right.
And another thing, too, like on that lady that complained and stuff like that, regardless if the other people had a great time, if this one woman complains, they go, oh, Jesus Christ. Did you ask the other people that
right.
were having a great
yes,
time?
Yes.
So it's just the mentality, mostly on the road, that's out there.
They only hear the bad things about
yeah.
it. Well, as an audience member, which I am most of the time,
yeah.
I just want to tear into the people who are being annoying. Now, I don't do it because if the comedian is bouncing off of them, I don't want him to come back later and go, lady, I can fight my own battles. What were you
sure.
doing?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
if he is handling it or he feels confident about it, I don't want to be his mother going, you leave my baby alone. You know, I mean,
yeah, and you look like
you know?
The asshole.
And
right.
then I'm
you
the
know?
Asshole.
I like when an audience turns on each other.
But I want to go
oh,
over.
Was beautiful that one time. Holy smokes. Over 3 weeks ago. Oh, they railed this guy.
Yeah.
It ruled. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's good because the audience is there. They want to see a show.
Yeah.
They don't want to see you messing around with Maggie.
Yeah.
You know, they want to hear the jokes.
Yeah.
I know. It's like, look, I'm from Jersey. I'll take some piano wire to this bitch's mouth.
Right on.
I don't care.
Yeah.
It's like, don't get me to that point.
Well,
yeah.
I think
if I pay good money, I want to enjoy myself. I don't want to hear you.
Yeah.
I think it is getting to that point. I think we're an angrier society. And
yes.
I really think comedy clubs need to start thinking about having metal detectors.
Well, I don't know if it's going to get that crazy.
Well, why shouldn't it?
Yeah.
You're mixing hotheads. Civility's on decline with booze.
Yeah.
And there might be some insults or some jokes that you don't like. Why is it out of the question?
It's
and I think the comics
not,
have to, apparently the comics need metal detectors too. If Cat Williams is going to be brandishing his weapon all over the
well,
place.
It's just, yeah. You know, I mean, crazy. It's an isolated thing. It's an isolated
thing. No, the Cat Williams thing is isolated.
Yeah.
People acting like assholes happens every week.
Yeah, I understand that. But I think that's going to be, you know.
I don't know.
You know why they wouldn't do that? If you go into a club and they're frisking you, I'm like, what kind of place am I coming to? You know what, man? Thanks, but no thanks, man. We're going to go see a movie.
No, it's for your safety.
I don't want to, but you want, I don't want to
go on a plane.
I understand
that. You go into a government building.
I understand that, but that's not places of entertainment. That's places of travel, and that's places of business.
But if you live in a town, you know the type of assholes that live in your town.
When the Ramones play, sometimes they have a pretty rough crowd that comes out to see them.
Yeah.
I was actually really pleased because they used to play at this place, Queen's Palace,
yeah.
And they would... I mean, they would pat me down too.
It was most likely an urban audience. Now,
yes.
I'm not being racist, but essentially, you'll see in a lot of urban clubs that's the culture, and that's what happened. I'm not being racist. That you know, it's just the way it is. Anybody will tell you that.
Put it out in tweet form, and we'll decide.
I was really happy they patted them all down.
But
I didn't know they weren't loaded.
As a matter of fact, on Bar Rescue, they had a whole thing, and they were matter of fact in an urban club. You know, you want to make sure that everything is cool and stuff like that, and you want to make sure the bouncers know how to pat down correctly.
Yep.
You know, and it's the nature of the deal.
You go into a football game, you're going through a metal detector.
Yeah.
And they pat you down, and that's for entertainment too.
But there's more of a greater risk than terrorism. I believe me, ISIS isn't really going to target Hardy Har-Hars. You know, they're going to target the sport.
It's not just terrorism. They want to keep people safe because they know people are getting drunk and out of hand. That's why they have fights. There's fights in comedy clubs.
Yeah.
There's fights between audience members, between boyfriends and girlfriends.
It would get to the point if there was a certain club where it started to get out of hand and there was some incidents.
There was that place.
They would start to do it.
It was when it started close. We did it on the tail end. What was it? Betty's Fireside in New Jersey. In Denville, New Jersey, I believe, where you perform behind the bar. I did it once or twice.
It's legendary. You know what? It's the most. It just so the audience knows, Betty's Fireside, and it's like a badge of honor to do it because in the comedy circles, it is the most notorious hell gig
really?
In the country.
It worked out well for me, but it was known where comics would get hit with like an ashtray,
what,
or salt shakers and everything.
Yeah. Holy,
and this is like 15, 20 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a, but you like to do it because it's like, you know, you say you were in the now.
You earned your stripes.
You know,
you got to talk about your hell gig.
I mean, hell, Leno even talked about the place.
Say.
You know, it was a legendary hell gig. It was on a Thursday night, you know, I mean, it was a 2-hour ride out from out there to Denville and stuff like that. And it used to be a strip club. They made it a bar and you would go up on where the strippers were and you would perform. Some nights would go, well, most nights would go bad, but.
Take it off.
But, you know, you would do the gig. It was a Thursday night gig.
That was the gig I did where, and I've actually said this in my, except in a joke, might be in my CD, I'm not even sure, where a girl came up to me, she's all pierced, pretty girl and everything.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, you know, if I don't like a guy, when I'm done blowing him, I'll just spit it in his face.
Oh! Wow!
Satisfied customer.
And wow. That's true story. And the joke, what I always say on my act is go, wow, you're all thinking like that's disgusting. And you're right, I'm thinking, wow, I can be a complete asshole. Worst case scenario, I'm still getting a blowjob.
I'll show him.
But
I'll
that's the type of clientele
him.
That was there.
Oh, my God.
That doesn't happen in other places.
But you know
no.
what the funny thing? The woman that used to run it, you would go on, when you go on stage or anything, just don't say cunt.
Wow. That's crazy.
I'm like, I wouldn't say that 12 miles out to sea. You know?
Yeah. 13, all bets are off.
Then international waters.
All the salty sailor language comes out.
Yeah.
I don't. I mean, with all the, do you think twice now? Because a lot of these states that we play in, you don't play in them. You will though if you decide to travel more. They have these open carry laws, you know, where people can bring their weapons everywhere,
mm-hmm.
unless the establishment specifically says.
Mm-hmm.
Would it make you think twice going into a nightclub? Say it's a rowdy Thursday night one nighter that does comedy once a week or once a month in a cowboy bar,
mm-hmm.
shit kickers, mm-hmm. everybody's drinking, and they could bring their guns in.
Not a problem at all. Not a problem at all. We used to hang when I used to go visit Anthony Cumier and Brother Joe,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. We used to go out and visit his dad out in California. We call it ranch and go out to San Juan Capistrano. Out there was called the Swallows Inn, big cowboy bar, everybody packing a gun. Everybody drank. Everybody had a good time. And there wasn't a problem at all because everybody knew that everybody had guns.
Yeah, but it's different when it's a comic. Because a comic might goof on somebody. Because comics aren't always wise in what they say.
Yeah.
Comics have been known to pick on people's physical appearance or call a chick ugly or whatever. I'm not saying they're good comics. I'm not saying they're smart comics.
Right.
But comics have been known to do that. And audience members have been known not to take too kindly to it.
Understood. But if you worked in a situation like that where, you know, you were allowed to carry guns and stuff like that, as stupid as you might be to heckle a comic and maybe pull a gun, you know that if you pull a gun, there's going to be at least 8 trained on you.
Yeah, but I'm talking about if you're the comic. I'm talking about the comic. Do you want to take that gig?
Yeah. Because as the comic, I know if the guy starts shit or pulls a gun, I know there's going to be 8.
Somebody else is going to be
a little late, though. It's not like everybody's got their hand on their trigger waiting. Joe.
Well, but somebody's going to be. Yeah, I think he's funny. Knock it off.
Sometimes you have shows where nobody thinks you're funny.
I did a gig, little red lights on your head.
Even so, you'll do a gig. There used to be a mic. We used to call it Brickhouse Brewery. Nice place. out in Patchogue, Long Island. Now, I used to do it. There was one night I did the gig, and I'm doing a mic out there, and I'm talking about something, and one guy didn't like what I was saying, or he didn't like me or whatever.
Remember being there.
Yeah, and he starts charging me to the stage.
No.
Now, as he's running, now you're wondering, what are you thinking?
Yeah.
What I'm thinking is this. Now, Brother Joe told me, because one time he was doing an acoustic gig, and there was an altercation and stuff like that, and Joe taught us, if you ever get in a situation like that, use your fist. Don't hit him with the stool. Don't hit him with anything, because it's gonna be considered assault with a weapon.
Yes.
So as he's charging with me, I'm pulling the mic out of the stand and backing the stool up and starting to get in a stance, ready to slug the son of a bitch. And at the last minute, one of the bouncers grabbed him and threw him out. But it does happen, and it happened. You could play an acoustic gig, playing acoustic guitars. What happened to Joe? There's assholes anywhere.
Yeah.
And this guy, you know, and it's weird. You got to think quick and think of the ramification. You got to defend yourself, and you got to go, I got to make sure he swings first so I can knock his lights out. And, you know, if it goes to court, you know, people are witnesses and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You think about all this stuff is running while the guy's charging you. You know, it's not fun. Does happen. You want to be an entertainer? Hey, there's some nights like that. Happen.
Yeah, well, I don't think when you take the stage, your life should be in jeopardy.
No, it absolutely
I don't think
shouldn't.
When you do anything except if you serve the country or whatever, your life should be in jeopardy. But sometimes you get in a situation when you work clubs, you decide, I want to be a musician, I want to work nightclubs, I want to work bars, I want to do this. You got to, during that course of that journey, it's going to happen sooner or later.
Yeah, somebody's going to be an idiot.
Sometimes people are very sensitive to things. Joan Rivers was a little sensitive on this interview here.
Oh, yes.
I don't know if you guys have heard this or not.
In all these, I guess forays, it's been, you know, very, very good to you. And you know, you've got best-selling books. You sell out on stage. Even with your fashion critiquing, while it's very mean in some ways, people
can't wait
to hear
what you're saying. It's not
mean. Really? It's not mean.
You can. It's not mean. I tell the truth. I'm sure I say the same things that all your viewers say to their friends sitting next to them on the couch. You know, we're one of the few shows that says, that's an ugly dress, and that's okay. These ladies make $28 million a picture. You really think that Nicki Minaj cares? I didn't like her dress.
Uh-huh.
You know, when you're in that kind of a bracket, you don't really care.
Yeah, you're not someone really worried about feelings being hurt.
Well, not when it's about dresses. It's not about them. It's about clothing.
Okay. Well, what about when it is about something, you know, that really does seem off limits to a lot of people? I mean, even in your book, you kind of joke about the death of Casey Anthony's baby, Princess Diana surviving so many landmines and who she dated. I mean, do you feel like there are boundaries ever, you know, even if it makes people uncomfortable or offend people or what?
Life is very tough. And if you can make a joke to make something easier and funny, do it. Done. Do it. That's all. Well, yeah. Darlene, I don't know what your life has been like, but I have a lot of people who have gone through hell. And if you can make, Winston Churchill said, if you make someone laugh, you give them a little vacation. And maybe you take the worst thing in the world and make it funny. It's a vacation for a minute from horror.
Yeah, and people love to laugh. I mean, clearly that's why people love you. But they also know that you, you know, you have some shock value to you. I mean, you're on the cover of your book. You're wearing a fur, and you knew that there were probably animal rights activists.
You know, this whole interview is becoming a defensive interview.
No!
Are you wearing leather shoes?
Yeah!
Shut up.
I'm talking...
You know what I mean? I don't want to hear. You're wearing fur. You're eating chicken. You're eating meat. I don't want to hear this nonsense. Come to me with a paper belt, and I'll talk to you.
But you did hear it in some of those press conferences. There were people who were upset, and you're just saying, no way.
Oh, you know, I'm going. I really am going, because all you have done is negative.
No!
All you have done is negative. I haven't heard that. I made people laugh for 50 years. I am put on earth to make people laugh. My book is funny. I wear fur that was killed 15 years ago. I work for animal rights. Stop it with, and you do this, and you're mean, and you're that. You are not the one to interview a person who does humor. Sorry.
Are we serious?
Oh, boy. Yeah, she was serious. And I thought she was joking the whole time. But in the end, we wondered, was this a stunt? Well, Rivers didn't return to the interview, but off camera, she kept her microphone on as she continued to talk and drop some rather unflattering four-letter words. So, yeah, she was serious.
Any flattering ones?
Yeah, well, she was dropping.
She was focusing.
Was she dropping them about that girl that was interviewing her?
All right. Do you think this was a stunt by Joan?
No.
No.
She was pissed.
I don't think so,
no, I think she got pissed off. I agree with her stance.
Mm-hmm. You think this was unduly negative? That was her stance.
Well, the problem is if she should have stayed. Because if you say, well, people get upset about this and they got to lighten up and blah, 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 for you to get upset and walk
off
is hypocritical on her part. I agreed with everything she did except walking off.
You know what? I don't think this was an interview unduly negative. You have Joan Rivers.
Yeah.
These are the questions you want to ask her.
Yeah.
Joan should be able to answer these questions. It can't be the first time Joan's heard these questions.
Or thought about it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the interviewer did anything wrong. I got to be honest with you.
I don't either. I think it was pretty shocking that she had that, you know, thin of a skin about the questions that were being asked.
I agree with you. It was shocking how... that she got so flustered.
Yes.
And as Joe pointed out, it was wrong that she walked off.
Because it was hypocritical of what she was arguing about.
As a comic,
yes.
You got to sit there. If you're going to say things, that if you're going to attack people and do things, you got to take it. I mean, it's like me. If I'm going to goof on things or say things that might hurt people, if I talk about black people, if I say the word nigger in my act and somebody says kike back to me, you know what? I got to take it.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I got to take it.
And if you walk that line, there was a great interview, a great debate between Piers Morgan and Ann Coulter.
Mm-hmm.
And Piers
Morgan. Two people who I don't
like. Oh, boy.
And Piers went after Ann Coulter and backed her in her corner. And Ann Coulter just jumped and sunk her fangs into him and shook him like a rag doll.
She's sexy?
Oh, I love Ann Coulter.
You like a big Adam's apple, do you, sir?
But the thing about it is she walks the walk and she talks the talk. Now, when you get...
like a man's man.
You get Piers Morgan planning to sit there and skewer her, and he starts skewing her, and she just sinks his fangs into him.
Well, I didn't see the interview, so I don't know if that's how it really happened. But hypothetically, if it did happen the way it did, where Piers Morgan personally attacked her,
right?
Then good for Ann Coulter for fighting back.
He attacked Ann Coulter on the beliefs and the thoughts and was pointing. Well, this is ridiculous. And Ann sat there and just fired back, gave counterpoints and stuff like that. That's the walk you walk.
Right.
If you're going to get called on the carpet and you're walking that walk, you have to sit there and you have to fight. I mean, you hear the arguments we have.
Oh, God.
You have to sit there. And
I
don't know if you're. But
anyway. To answer your question, no, you don't. You don't have to sit there.
You have to sit there.
You could walk away.
But I'm sure many nights you wish you could have, especially last year.
Yeah, it's like, da-da-da-da-da, I got to go.
But I think, Joan had some good points that she was firing back. You're hypocritical.
Yeah.
She had a great argument back.
I don't think she had a good argument. Because you know what? She said, well, I'm making fun of dresses. I'm making fun of people.
No.
You're making fun of people. That's their choice of style. And you're nasty. I've seen
but
her
you're
show.
There as Vicious. A satirist. You're there.
Exactly.
She's a satirist.
Right.
Which proves the point. You're a satirist. You dish it. you better take it.
Well, hold right. on. Hold right. on. We're looking at two different arguments here. Okay.
Oh.
Yes, we are.
Okay.
In the context of her insulting, you know, or goofing on these people.
Right.
She is a satirist. That's what people look for. That's her deal.
Yeah.
That's argument one.
Yeah, okay. No. She's made this part of her career by making other people look bad. That's what it
that's
is.
It is. Yes. Right, now, as a satirist, that's her job and that's her gig.
That's what yes. she's getting paid for.
Second part of the argument. Now I'm going to sit on your side of the table. She shouldn't have walked off.
No. Yes.
She shouldn't have walked off.
She was a hypocrite.
Yeah. Yes.
And
yes.
you know what?
Yes.
I like Joan Rivers. I don't like what she does as far as the wardrobe. It's just so base. It's just a bunch of hens who could never wear what these people wear, will never look how these people look.
But it is.
It's the easiest bullshit.
But it is. There is an audience there that
yes,
sees
there
these people
yes.
all
fine,
primp and polished
yes.
and phony and Hollywood and stuff like that. And she sits there for the regular people and just rips it
but
apart.
But when you've had a million plastic surgeries, who are you to rip people apart on their looks?
Really?
Well, want to know something? Yes. And if somebody goofs up.
I don't even know what that means.
I don't either.
Here's the explanation.
Okay.
Joe's all into the fingers and go. It's like he's going to play cymbals at any moment.
He's animated. He loved that dress. He's going to tell you
why. Talk show for the past 2 weeks, and I'm finally back on mine. I'm going to talk.
Joe's ready.
This is like watching a porno, and you're a porno guy. Now you're on set finally. Spurt.
So this argument will be over very quickly.
Oh, my eye.
Well, it's like a porno, so Joe's done.
Yeah. My leg. Oh.
Mop boy.
That's a shot.
Mop boy.
Shot a thigh.
But mop boy. But here's the thing. So you go, well, mop she's had plastic boy. Surgery, blah, blah, and she should be one to talk. But if she gets called on that, she has to sit there and
yes. take it. Yes.
That's what I was
yes.
getting.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm
thinking. Yeah.
I like Joan Rivers. I like a lot of her humor. I don't like that aspect. I don't like that show.
Right.
I don't like these people doing it. But that's my point. You're going to get called on the carpet.
Yep.
If, you know, it's like me when I talk about religion or something.
Right.
If somebody's going to call me on the carpet about talking about religion, I got to take it. I can't stone. How dare you?
Yeah.
You're the wrong person to interview me. No. I agreed to an interview on CNN. Theoretically, it's a news organization.
In quotes.
I did not give them a list of things that they could or could not ask me, some interviews do.
Right.
You take it.
Right.
And if you really believe in what you're doing, you have the answer to without getting angry.
She should have had no problem with those
now,
questions.
Now, I do a bit of my act. I do a bit about scared. That was one of favorite Davin's bits. He always encourages me with it. It's like scared straight. I know you saw the bit like I go, I have a dog and it's unruly. And my wife says, we got to get it a trainer. And I go, it needs to go to scared straight. And I go, I got to need the dog to go to the dog pound and have two flea bitten pit bulls come out. And I go, who's wagging they tail? And I do the black voice. So I'm working with a black comic that night. He goes, notice Joe Curry. He goes up and does that bit, and it's always black people in that joke. And I go, and me.
That's right.
But you know what I said? I go, have you watched the show? And the whole audience, if you're going to do it and you get called on it, you have to sit there and defend it.
Yeah.
You can't hide. You can't.
I always picture the dog when Joe does it as like a white and gray bulldog. Who wagging their tail?
Who's wagging
their
tail?
Like the Georgetown
tail?
Hoya. That's what I am. I don't know. I didn't know it was a black Doberman Pinscher. I had no idea.
It's black.
You racist prick. You
yes. But have you watched the show?
They don't have dogs talking, stupid. I have watched the show. It's not about peeing on the rug. It's about bad things like rape and not the humorous way.
But it's like if you walk that line, you have to be prepared to take that line. I mean, Anthony, when he did all that, he had a sit and he went on. He was interviewed. He went on Red Eye.
It doesn't seem like he was prepared. It does not seem like he was prepared when the shit hit the fan. He seemed a bit surprised.
Surprised, but he didn't run. He didn't apologize.
No,
right.
I respect that.
That's the point. And that's why he did not apologize, because he'd be hypocritical. So I'm going to say
that. Well, I've always respected him for that.
So in that context, getting back to Joan Rivers, if you're going to dish and you're going to do that and you're going to get called and you're going to go on a show full of hens and get called on it, you got to sit there and you're going to sit there and you're going to defend yourself. You're not going to walk. You're going to try to win your argument, and there you go.
I don't. You know, I can only conclude that she doesn't even believe in herself anymore.
You know what? I wonder about that, because really, she must have some insight into how she behaves and how she's perceived by other people. And the thing is that on that show, which I do watch, and actually two of the women on the show wear fashion, but they're not vicious. They're not vicious.
The Juliet.
Yeah, Juliana.
Juliana, the and the Osborne daughter.
Yeah, Kelly Osborne, who is
and,
very
and the guy
kind.
Who's the daughter too. Because yeah. you can't have a fashion show with a straight man, apparently.
Yeah. No, you can't. But, yeah. but the thing is that...
I'd love to see Mike Tyson on that.
What that bit wearing? Look at that. She got a bib on or something? What is
her
that?
Her ass is too big for that color. I'd love to see Mike Tyson on
that. I'll tell you what I'd do to that ass.
I'd punch a bitch you with that out with your red carpet.
I like a haircut. It frames the ears very nicely.
I'd be backstage as the designer. Quick, get the fucking bobby pins. That bitch back here and do some altering before he kills us.
You know what? You're right. Mike Tyson has a problem with the dress. That dress is changing.
Come here. All right, get on there. Come on. Alter. Him. Look, he's got a tattoo in his face. I've got to keep him happy.
I would love to. Mike Tyson needs to go on one of these stupid shows.
That would be very funny.
It would be awesome. And then when Joan gets out of hand, he just bites her ear.
Yeah, you know what? She has it coming. But, when that interviewer said to her, you know, oh, you're so mean on there. And she said, no, they're stupid. I'm just talking about the clothes. No, she's not. That's really incredibly disingenuous of her to say.
She doesn't want to take any responsibility.
But is it any different than when Mr. Blackwell used to put out his worst dress?
He was mean, but she is, like, personally vicious. She's not just talking about clothes.
I don't think it's different. I've just never heard him interviewed.
She's still edgy. She's still a comic. She still tells it like it is. She has her audience that goes for that.
Yep.
Now she goes on a show that's all ass powdering.
She's there to push a book.
Yeah,
but you got to know. I mean, this is a big get for these people. All right. Was the Joan Rivers wearing fur on the cover of her book a calculated publicity stunt?
No, I think that's how she dresses. That's how she is. And I mean, there is an argument for people who wear fur that the fur has been handed down. It's been around for a long time. I don't particularly agree with that. I think that if you're against fur, you don't wear
fur.
But again,
she's excusing her actions.
She was.
And in all these cases, she did not take any responsibility for her behavior.
You're wearing leather shoes? Shut up!
And as a comic who likes to call people on the carpet.
Yep. She can't take it.
I mean, Kathy Griffin does the same thing, but you don't see Kathy Griffin running from anything.
Well, I don't know. I don't watch her.
I don't know for that. Now, maybe that might be calculated for her wearing fur to fly in the face.
Kathy Griffin. Oh, my God.
Oh, I love Kathy Griffin.
I do, too.
I had a big crush on her. But,
really?
Yeah.
Pre-plastic surgery or post?
That would be pre.
Really?
Yeah.
You liked ugly Kathy Griffin.
I saw her.
You're really not into attractive women, are you? Now that we know you like Ann Coulter and Kathy Griffin Prius.
Attractive women.
You like a woman that's been hit in the face with a shovel.
I do not. I love attractive women.
Apparently you got a thing for ugly women.
No, I don't.
Kathy Griffin pre-work was not attractive.
Yeah, but she looks too plasticky now.
I didn't say this was a good thing.
No, I don't know. Oh. I think that she improved her looks.
I think so. She's like, I'd be like 50 now. She looks good.
Yeah,
who was the girl that was with Patrick Swayze?
Jennifer Grey.
Jennifer Grey. Now, I liked Jennifer Grey before she had the nose job.
Yeah,
so did I.
A busted-up chick.
I just went busted-up.
She looked better with a smaller nose.
I loved her.
I'm not saying that people should get plastic surgery to look better. I'm not saying they should do that. I mean, you know, be happy if you can with how you look. That's cool. I'm not advocating. But let's be honest. Joe's really not naming three of the most attractive women we've ever seen.
He likes faces with character.
He likes faces that look like they got hit in the face with balls.
I like.
Hey, you know what? If they've been hit in the face with balls that many times, maybe they're up for some rough and tumble with Joe.
Joe feels he could come on a leg and nobody will be upset.
I think Kathy would be down with that.
But keep in mind, I'm...
I'm going to emphasize. I'm going to bring it on home.
Yeah.
But, you know, like Joe, like I showed her a picture of Juliana Avalos in the beginning. When she was the face of the scammer.
Didn't find her attractive.
Joe did not find... said she was too made up. Yeah. If you take Avalos, think about what you were, one of her as a person. Avalos foes pre-surgery Kathy Griffin versus Ann Coulter versus pre-surgery Jennifer Grey. I'm taking the scamming one.
Okay, I'll take the other three.
There's a lid for every friggin' pot.
What about you, Pip?
True.
Which one of those... Of that four?
Yeah, of those four.
Of those four? I actually don't think Avalos is all that pretty, so I thought Jennifer Grey.
Yes.
Her nose was too big for her face.
No, it was okay.
Cute.
Yeah, she was cute.
She looked Jewish. It's not good to look
I love Jewish women.
Do you?
Yes.
I didn't know that. There must be the thriftiness that you have in common.
Scottish part of me.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Tom is very excited. Wow. Two Swayze references between the chat and the show in one night. What are the odds?
What are the
odds?
We're
talking about Roundhouse.
Roadhouse.
When we're talking about the beatings in the clubs. So he's like,
I used to have a punishment joke. Joe probably saw it about Patrick Swayze when he had cancer.
What?
When the audience was bad. I said, you know, Patrick Swayze, something like this, was just diagnosed with cancer. And upon hearing about it, he goes, nobody puts cancer in the corner.
Oh, God.
Punishment jokes.
Oh.
If an audience is going to annoy me, I will annoy them back.
Yeah.
Oh, they need to learn. They didn't punch you.
See, why would have had a nose like Jennifer Grey.
There you go.
See why he wants metal detectors in the clubs?
Absolutely.
Yes, he's going to tell jokes like rent that. Them
out. Yeah, but you don't see me storming off and not taking credit for it. I'm just talking about a nose.
He sat there with the tampon up his nose and took it like a man.
Yeah. Exactly. I take tampons like a man.
Yes.
And don't you forget it, Pip Helix. Right. And we'll be back in a few minutes.
Unique and different, by incorporating guest past and present experiences, The Kerry Edelman Show interviews, explores, and delves into the lives of some of the most fascinating and interesting musicians, comedians, and writers in the entertainment industry today. Check out our show live Monday evenings at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. To listen live or check out past shows, go to blogtalkradio.com/Kerry Edelman. The Watson & Watson Show was born from a labor of love, or should we say constant disagreement. Judy and Johnny Watson, a.k.a. mother and son, are constantly battling each other on different issues of life, from politics to sports to proper parenting, or in Italian family terms, discussing passionately about it. If you like a radio show that is entertaining, funny, passionate, and you can have basically the whole family enjoy it, tune on in. You won't be disappointed. If anything, after listening to these two, you'll realize your family isn't that bad after all. Every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, on Watson and Watson.com.